Hello, my name is Naomi McDougall-Jones, and this is Fearfulless, filmmaking from the edge, a weekly window into the successes, failures, and conversations of an independent filmmaker. Okay, so I have some very good news, which is that 3 weeks in to this podcast, I have come up with a format that I think will work for going forward, thanks to my friend Meredith Melnick. So I think every week there will be three segments to the show. The first one will be, as planned, me talking about my successes, failures, what's going on with my projects, all of this, and my personal adventures in my career. And then the second segment will be me doing a 10 to 15 minute interview with somebody who I am meeting with anyway that week. So sort of just tacking on an interview to the end of a normal meeting. So some of these will be other artists, some of them will be people who are also in the middle years, some of them may be not in the film industry, they may be audience members, they may be very successful people in the industry who have made it through the middle years, who can talk to us about how they made it through the middle years. Some of them will be distributors or people in other segments of the industry. Hopefully we'll talk to, I don't know, a sound guy at some point, but I think the exercise of this show is for you and I to crack this question of how to have a sustainable life as an artist. So we'll talk to people who can help us answer that question and who might have different perspectives than I do or answers that I don't have. So that'll be the interview will be the second segment. And then the final segment will be a quick, we'll call it My Favorite Things, because I'm a total Sound of Music dork. And I'll be able to share with you something that I found that week that may be helpful to somebody who is trying to do what I'm trying to do, or maybe just a movie I loved or a book I loved or a great resource or something. So I'll share something with you at the end. I think that will be the format, and I feel very excited about it. Thank you, Meredith. Okay, so we're having a doozy of a week on Bite Me. So as I hinted at before, we're in this sort of like critical setting sail moment with this film. And this is like a central theory I have around how independent film happens, which is that you are never going to, or it's the golden unicorn of filmmaking to be in the scenario where you actually have all of the money and all of the resources you need, and you have the cast, and you have all of the pieces, and then you very calmly set the shoot dates, and then you proceed in an orderly manner. I think in almost every scenario, you just hit this critical point where you have enough of the pieces that then you set shoot dates, and you head very seriously towards them, sort of with the blind faith that the rest of the things will come in time. It's the jump in the net will appear theory taken to a rather extreme place. So it's like the white knuckle period, and we are in that right now with Bite Me. The biggest white knuckle thing this week is finishing the casting of the leads of the film, which I have learned so much about how this works. So on my last film, Imagine I'm Beautiful, my first and last film, we made it for $80,000. We had no name actors. The casting process was totally normal to probably what you've experienced in any other thing. So this time we're casting name actors in the leads, and that is a whole different ball of wax. And I wish somebody had explained to me how this works ahead of time, because I had no idea. And, for that reason, I'm very excited to explain it to you, which I'm going to do next week. Once this is all over, because I think it's one of those things that I probably shouldn't talk about until it's over. So I'm going to talk about that next week. But we're in a very exciting period. Please pray for us. I think it's all going to work out, but we're in the horrible period of waiting for people to say yes or no, which is always really nerve-wracking. Okay, so what I want to talk about this week is something that I said in the first episode, and I don't actually believe, but it was an interesting slip. So in setting up this show, I had said something like, you know, we're going to see whether or not I make it. And that's part of the, adventure of the show. But as somebody pointed out to me, I don't actually believe in making it. I think the whole concept of making it or not making it is a myth. Because when have you made it? What is it? And when have you not made it? Like, not making it would be like if somebody told, if there was some large person who could say, you may never audition again, or you may never write another script again, please leave and go back to where you came from, you can never try again. And that just, that's not real. You can always audition again, you can always write another script, you can always try again. So not making it is not a thing. You can at some point decide that the sacrifices that this career requires are not some ones you're willing to make, and therefore you make another decision and you decide to move someplace else or do something else, and that's a totally valid decision because it does require a lot of sacrifice. Or you continue to make the decision to keep rolling the dice. So I have found that the most useful way for myself of thinking about the film industry or the entertainment industry in general is like we're all playing this game of chutes and ladders. And so there's like the forward movement of the game, but then there's also this sort of like insanely random element where like on the third square you might suddenly hit a ladder and shoot up all the way to like the fifth level, but then similarly, you may get seven levels up and suddenly hit a bad square and shoot down three more levels. So there's like this sort of whimsical and slightly demented element of that that it exists within the film industry, career-wise. But the point is just to keep playing. Like, you don't play chutes and ladders for the game to be over. You play chutes and ladders to play chutes and ladders, to pass time or to, because it's fun. And similarly, like, what is the end of that board, really? I mean, who among us has made it off the board? And if you have, what's the point? I mean, like, maybe Meryl Streep has made it off the board. Maybe. But then, like, but then she does weird things sometimes. Like, just, you feel because, like, what else is she gonna do? You know, like, that's not actually the goal. The goal is to get to keep rolling the dice and keep playing the game. So when I set up the idea of, like, let's see if I make it, that's not actually what I meant. And when I talk about, like, this middle years before you make it, let me try to redefine that. I think what success means to me is to be able to find a way of having a sustainable life playing the game, rolling the dice, getting to do your work over and over and over your career and life. But sustainable is the key word. And that's where I feel like I'm not yet. And a big part of that is definitely financial. I am not getting paid enough for my work yet to live, and I never, well, actually, at this very moment, I am. I am getting paid enough to work, to live very tightly, but, which is amazing, and this is the first time that that has happened in my life, and I am so grateful for that, but I can't live like this forever, I don't think. And so I think what I'm interested in exploring with this podcast is, okay, so then what? Like, is the answer that to do what I want to do, you just have to have another job? Is that the answer that just pays the bills and then you're able to do your work, which wouldn't be the worst thing necessarily, but what I'm interested in figuring out and talking to other people about and trying to get, like, figure out for myself and for you is, like, is there a way to do this where you are making enough money off of the work that you're doing to live? And maybe not live lavishly, but live, like, above the poverty line, I guess is my question, which I so far in my adult life have never done. So that's an element of, like, when I say making it, what I mean is, like, being able to pay for your life. And then the second element, I think, is more alchemical, but has something to do with the levels on the board of Chutes and Ladders, which is just, like, I want to make work with the best people. And when I have a film project and I want to, like, it would be really nice to get to pick up the phone and call whoever I wanted and have them want to do a project with me and not feel like they're having to take a real risk, or their agent feeling like they're having to take a real risk to work with me because I'm an unknown quantity. So what I'm not saying is making it in terms of celebrity, because the more I see of that, the more I feel like celebrity is probably one of the worst things that can happen to a person. But I guess it's like being known within the, known and respected as an artist enough within the industry that you have access to play with the people you want to play with. Which the other thing I'm interested in finding out is that possible without the celebrity angle, which I think is really complicated. My idea of success is like finding the sweet spot where you have enough resources and respect within the industry, but it hasn't quite bled out into like general celebrity. And that's the ideal, I think. And maybe what that means is having your own audience as a filmmaker. In fact, I'm pretty sure that that's what that means, that who will follow you, who will always come and turn out and see your movies, which would be so, and to have a big enough audience that way that it sustains your work and your ability to do work, because of course the other thing is funding for your work. So I just wanted to be clear that when I said making it, I didn't mean making it in like a celebrity way or in like a status way. I mean it in a much more complicated way, as I have just explained. Okay. The last thing I'd like to say this week, at the risk of sounding like an Oscar speech, is that in my last episode, when I was talking about all of the wonderful things that have happened to me in my career since and as a result of Imagine Beautiful, I forgot to mention my agent, Christina Campagnola, who is definitely one of the wonderful things that has happened to me. And I don't say that for any other reason than it's true. And I have complicated feelings about agents as a species, as a whole, but Christina is one of the best ones, and maybe the best one I've ever met. And she cares so passionately about her clients and about the work she does, and I feel so lucky to have a team, Joanne, my manager, and Christina, my agent, who genuinely care about the work and not about sort of these other dumb things that people care about in this business. It's important to say that because, oh my God, does it take a village to make any kind of career in the arts happen? And for so long, you don't get that external support, or I didn't, and I think a lot of people don't. You don't have a team, and you don't have other people believing in you. For a long time, you are just clinging on to the sole thought on your own that you are talented enough that your work merits being seen by people. And so it is a real privilege and blessing to be at the point where you do have other people at bat for you, and I have two of the best people. So I wanted to say that I realized after that episode that I had forgotten her and I felt terrible. So that's what I have to say this week. We are going to jump to my first interview segment, and I will talk to you again at the end of the show. Hello. We are here with our first interview segment with Sonia O'Hara. We are sitting in Milk and Honey,
in Brooklyn, so you'll hear coffee shop sounds. And we were having a meeting anyway today, and I asked if we could tag on this interview.
Yeah.
And why are we having this meeting today before now?
We have this really uncanny pseudo relationship where I felt like we both knew of each other before we met each other. And we both obviously cast Katie Morrison, the actress, as the lead in our inaugural features.
Right. So Katie Morrison, who plays Kate, the my co-star in Imagine I'm Beautiful, which I wrote and acted in, Sonia.
Yes, and Katie played Ellen, my co-lead in Ovum, the feature that I wrote and produced and starred in.
A year later.
Yes, which is uncanny.
And we both have red hair.
Yes, and blue eyes.
And you just moved into the apartment that I moved out of 2 weeks ago.
Which is also very strange.
Very strange. But we've never had an actual conversation.
Right.
So today is the first time that we're having an actual conversation.
Yes.
And I feel like it has reinforced why this podcast is important, because, like...
Absolutely.
It's been so great. Because I feel like we're trying to do very similar things. We're both kind of trying to take the world by storm, make your own content as women in the business.
And meeting somebody who's also in a similar stage to where I am, where suddenly people are potentially taking notice and watching our art, but we're trying to infiltrate that next tier of the industry and get it to more people and get...
And so what I am doubly excited about now that we've added this interview element of the podcast is that what I was saying to you is I feel like we really struggle as filmmakers when we don't have information. And there's and as you say, the higher up you get, the more people want
to be secretive and it's hush-hush.
Which is so unhelpful.
Right, because if we don't share our tools, we're all going to make the same mistakes again and again.
So hopefully this podcast can serve as like this coffee, but writ large with a lot of people.
Yes.
And we can like crack some of these questions. Okay, so you have been in the business how long?
I've been in the industry in New York for 11 years. I moved here at 17 to go to the New York Conservatory for Dramatic Arts as an actor. I moved to LA, did the acting thing there for 3.5 years, moved back to New York, and at that point I started to write my own roles because, just like you, I got sick of the kind of stereotypical one-dimensional slutty roles I was being cast in.
Yeah. I was playing the crazy people, but
but similar. Yes.
Yeah. And so you started writing...
Only recently. I mean, 3 years ago, maybe 3.5, I took a screenwriting class at Gotham, and it was the very first time outside of college that I had written anything.
So it's pretty amazing that within 3 years, you've made a micro-budget feature film, and now...
The hour-long pilot, Doomsday. And I think the interesting thing, after we both made those initial feature films, I knew that how hard it was to get into film festivals, and I knew it was crucial in order for my pilot to get any audience that it got seen and it would get into places where there's an actual built-in audience, as opposed to some film festivals where you're kind of just inviting your own friends and family to fill those audiences. So I submitted to 3 TV-specific web festivals. The New York Television Festival, ITV Fest, which is now sponsored by HBO, and Series Fest in Denver. And at that point, because I knew from last time how hard it is to get into the bigger festivals, and I didn't have any name in my pilot, we just kind of were like, okay, well, the submissions aren't cheap, but it's my only real shot to get it out there. We submitted, and then I was kind of baffled when we got into all 3.
And you got into all 3.
Yeah, which was insane and totally, and little known fact, Series Fest is the only festival where they actually fly the filmmakers across the country.
Oh my God,
and it was the first time that happened.
That's
so I'm telling everyone to submit to that.
Yeah. Okay, so these festivals, and you said something earlier to me which I thought was interesting, was that you feel like TV festivals are more of a meritocracy than film festivals.
And I'm telling everyone to go make pilots, because when I went to film festivals, if my film didn't have a major name, first of all, I'm even if I'm lucky enough to get in, I'm competing against films that are sometimes almost studio level.
Yeah.
Like, they have giant budgets. None of them were below 500,000, and since I had a tiny, tiny budget, it was just really, really difficult. And they all have names, and they all have giant publicists.
Right.
So I was already at that disadvantage. But with these pilots, it seems like all of the studios right now are sending representatives to these festivals because there were so few of them, and they're looking for new voices. And since no one has names, and everyone is making something right. on like real on a gear that most of us can afford,
right.
and people are doing like 5, 10, 12 minute episodes.
Right.
I came in with an hour long drama, and I think that helped us stand out. We just lucked out at the right time having something different than what everyone else was doing.
Right.
Then we happened to, out of those festivals, we won them. And after we lucked out and got best series at Brooklyn Web Fest and ITV Fest and then at New York Television Festival, I won best director with my co-director Jazz Bell. And at that point, we suddenly had people that were willing to sit down and have actual meetings with
Which
us.
Which is, if you're not in this industry.
And I never had a filmmaking meeting really with anyone for OVM other than like people, friends of friends,
right.
and people doing courtesy meetings that I don't think they necessarily were interested.
We're talking about like real meetings with real networks.
Right.
Yeah.
So suddenly they were like, okay, well, our sponsors are HBO, and someone from HBO saw the show. Will you sit down with them? And I was like, holy shit, of course, please.
Yeah.
And we would, and so we sat down with someone from HBO who's the head of talent development, and she's suddenly asking me questions about representation.
Right.
And as an actor, I have representation, but as a filmmaker, I had no one.
Right.
And she's like, well, if you're not with one of the big three, like, how are you really going to have anyone take you seriously or respond to your emails? So that day, as soon as I got back from Dover, Vermont, from ITV Fest, I started cold calling agencies, which is something that I haven't done ever.
Wow.
I just called up WME, which is insane, and I said, can I speak to someone in the packaging department? And they were like, you mean the newsroom? And I was like, they were like, you mean the mailroom? And I was like, no, not the mailroom. Like, literally, I was like, I have someone from HBO that is semi-interested. And they were like, I'm sorry, you need a referral. And I was like, but I can actually name the person right now. Here is her card. And she said to get big representation.
Right.
So she continued negotiating and seeing if there's any interest. And no one would help me.
Right.
And then at that point, I reached out to all the actors that are in the cast of my project.
Yes.
And we just happened that we have actors that aren't known, but they're with Paradigm and they're with Innovative and they're with good agencies. So they all wrote to their agents and said, hey,
amazing.
I'm in a show. And now it's getting some interest, will you send it along?
Right.
But all of their agents ended up saying, well, if it moves forward, it won't have you in it. That's how these things go.
Right.
So still, we were getting stuck behind this wall. And then, weirdly enough, an actress that stars in the project was in LA for her mother's wedding, and she partied with someone, and she happened to meet a major literary manager. And then he was like, I don't rep actors, but I rep filmmakers. And she sent her stuff to him. And then they finally agreed to watch the pilot.
So the moral of the story is that everything in this business happens at parties and no one.
Unfortunately, and we don't go to cool enough
parties.
We're
not going to the right parties.
Right. So that's it.
Okay. So tell me the thing that you love most about what's happening in your career right now. Like, what is the most fulfilling thing that is happening?
I love that right now I have a team in place that is able to, if I'm interested in going after a certain production company, I now have a liaison that can actually get my script to decision makers,
right.
which doesn't mean necessarily that anyone will be interested,
right.
but now someone
right.
will read my script
right.
and it will get endorsed.
You're in the game.
I'm finally in the game at the very bottom of the totem,
but I'm in the game. And when you say a team, so you have a manager.
I have a manager, and then through the manager, they were able to submit the project to an agency, one of the big three, I wish I could say the name, that reps the rest of their clients. So even
right.
though their clients have a much more notable career than I do
right.
at this point, they were able to use their leverage to get the project in front of an agent there.
Right.
The agent saw it and liked it, and now I guess you'd say we're freelancing because
right.
they're submitting the project around.
The project, but they're not
the
repping
project's
you.
Repped, but I
right.
am not yet repped.
Right. Got it.
Yes.
Okay. So having a team, and I am with, like, for the first time in my life, I have a team that I...
who believe in you and are excited about
and,
what
like,
you're doing.
Get what I'm doing. And that is like, actually, I was talking about this in the earlier part of today's episode because it's just so amazing. It's like, that's a real win.
Yeah.
So what are the things that you still feel like you would like to change? And I mean, let's not. You said to me earlier that you feel like you have very specific goals for what you want your career to be.
Right.
What's the distance you need to travel between where you are and where you want to be?
Well, when I'm meeting people and when I'm meeting networks, there's been a bit of a chasm where they're interested. They're like, we like your voice, which is great and flattering. We like what it is that you're doing. But now how can you be a cog in the machine at our network? Potentially, like, there might be an option to be introduced to someone who could put me in the writer's room. But no one is interested in greenlighting new material through traditional avenues. So it seems like I'm still going to have to go out there and take my show and try to meet people that might take it to that ideal next step of having it on a Netflix platform, because the bigger places don't seem to understand what to do with micro-budget material, even if they love it. And there's that thing of, do they see it as a proof of concept,
right,
or do they see it as an idea they want to option?
Right.
Not necessarily that they're like, okay, this thing as is, even though we think it's
right,
good, without names,
right,
what do we do with it?
Right.
So just trying to find a platform to put the work that I've produced,
right,
so people can watch it. And then you have a dream thing like the OA, like what Britt
right,
Marling is doing is obviously
right,
still the wet dream.
Right.
And it's finding a home so
right,
you can...
Right. So your dream is TV probably now.
Right. At this point, making another micro-budget feature and trying to feel like having the confidence to know that I can recoup investments for investors scares me a little.
Yeah.
Because I just wonder how doable it is on this level
right,
unless I get major names. And
right,
TV, right now I'm in a good groove and I have
right,
those connections.
Yeah.
But I don't have those movie connections yet.
Right, right. We were saying earlier, it's so interesting because we made these films that were more or less the same budget
right,
range.
Yeah, yeah.
And with the same actors.
Right,
like,
which is crazy.
Sort of like also women films, like sort of
right,
like, and then since then we've kind of tried to attack this problem of like, okay, now what next from like different angles.
Right.
So you went super renegade.
I went renegade, and after we did the festival circuit with it, we got into 5 good festivals, but none of the top tier ones. And at that point, it just happened that there was a sales agent in an audience, or somebody referred it. I don't quite know how I found that sales agent. But then at that point, they started submitting it to distributors, and we found a distributor that was willing to release it, which was exciting. But it used to be that in and of itself, getting a distributor was the holy grail.
Right.
But now with VOD and online iTunes releases, I wonder how much of it, to be honest, I could have done on my own and kept it in a higher
yeah,
percentage of any money that it makes.
Right. And this is something I talked about in an earlier episode, which is that I think probably you would make, like, it's better for the bottom line to self-distribute, probably.
Right.
But
the VOD, is it an honor to be on VOD anymore? I don't even know what it is,
So I think for us, like, getting to say forever that we got a distribution deal is worth a lot.
Right.
And also just from the exhaustion perspective of,
well,
like,
we now have a track record.
Right.
And people are willing to watch my second project because they know the first one at least got distribution.
Right.
And now, weirdly enough, our VOD date is in April, and that's coming out. And so simultaneously, we have a little buzz from
right,
Ovum finally being released and with the show being out there on the festival
right,
circuit.
Right.
So we're hoping we can leverage one
yeah,
to actually
yeah,
get people to go
yeah,
see it.
Okay, let's plug it.
Yeah.
So,
Ovum is a dark comedy about an offbeat actress who will do anything for a part, who ends up giving up a part of herself when her method acting exercise goes too far and she ends up selling her eggs. And I wrote about selling my own eggs when I was doing the process and funded part of the movie with the money I got as an egg donor, which is very meta and weird. And it's called Ovum, and it will be on VOD on April 11th. So
what, Amazon? And
Amazon, Google Play.
iTunes. Great. Buy it.
Not Hulu, as I know of yet,
okay,
but maybe.
So buy it, watch it legally.
Yes.
It's great. Yeah, it's a great film.
Thank you.
Okay. Talk to me about... So you, like me, are trying to do a lot.
Yes.
I think you, like me, are rather ambitious.
Yes.
I don't know, almost to a fault.
I
don't know you that well, but
right,
I'm getting that sense.
We're both crazy ambitious redheads.
And you're trying to pull a lot out of nothing.
Right.
How often do you experience moments of total overwhelm?
all the time. Like this past shoot this summer for episode 2 of Doomsday, my co-director and producer extraordinaire Jaspel Binning tore his Achilles 2 days before we had to go on set.
Yeah.
So suddenly, for the first time in my life, I had to direct completely alone. And I felt equipped as part of a directing team where we each have certain elements covered, but suddenly I'm being thrown into the deep end and we lost a producer and that's catastrophic.
Yeah.
And suddenly our primary location fell through and all of my actors are having to stay in a basement without windows and are having to be really quiet through the duration of the shoot. So it goes from being like, at least it's low paid, but it's summer camp in the forest, to suddenly them being like prisoners in a basement. And the morale on the whole shoot plummeted.
Yeah.
And it worked in the story because everyone's, they're miserable cult members, but it was my least positive experience on a set.
So there are those epic moments of catastrophe.
Yes.
Right. But what about like quiet moments? So here I had one of these today.
Right.
Just moments where like you're going through the work of like trying to make something happen.
Right.
And suddenly everything is going wrong on every project you're doing. And it, of course it's not, but it feels that way. And like, and you're like, what am I doing?
Like post-production for me, I feel wildly powerless because I obviously employ an editor. I'm not the editor. So I feel kind of superfluous to the entire process. Like I'm sitting there in the editing room without any of the tangible skills to actually improve the project other than a vision of what I want. And I feel like a hack, and I feel like nothing I'm doing is actually working, and that it's never going to come into fruition or get finished, and everyone's yelling at me because we have to meet deadlines, and we have to get it done by X date for the IFP labs or whatever else.
So how do you get through this?
I'm a super goal-oriented person, and I use the public shaming of Facebook to actually keep me on task. So I just tell everyone I know in my entire extended network, I will have a draft done by this date. I will get it. I will submit it to this festival.
Yeah.
And I book like an actual venue to do a screening for the cast and crew before I have a cut.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to finish, like external goals as a way to finish what I'm doing.
That's great.
Yeah, that kind of works.
Yeah.
Usually.
talk about, so we both act in our own stuff.
Yes.
I don't know if you want to do that forever, but
I mean,
you have been.
Right.
Can you talk about, I've experienced that as a difficult thing. Like that's something that a lot of people will try to talk you out of.
It's incredibly frustrating because Naomi, we're both actors first in a way that this is not a dilettante who's never acted that wants to act in our own project for vanity purposes.
Right.
We are trained, skilled, hireable actors that have worked in many, many other people's projects.
Right.
But suddenly people just assume that your skill level must be subpar and that you're
It's so weird.
It's insane.
What do you think that is? Like, to me, I always say it's like telling a musician that he can't play the song he's written.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
To me, it's baffling, but all I can think of is the classic directors that do cameos in their own films as like a comedic like wink at the audience.
Yeah.
And that people think that you cannot possibly possess enough skills at a professional level. But I mean, you and I were both SAG and Equity and everything else long before we were filmmakers. And it's
it's interesting. I mean, I think the stigma is going away slightly. I do think it was worse. Like when I started doing it a little while ago, but I also think it's applied to women more often.
Yes.
And I think we're also forced to do it more often because there are just fewer good parts.
But it's also been good. It's been good and bad. Like there were times that people thought because I was with a major agency as a filmmaker that automatically meant I had the same access as an actor, especially because I'm in the projects that I'm producing and they're going, really well. But I've found that the good thing is I have footage that now accurately represents the kind of roles that I play really fucking well.
Sorry.
And I end up using that footage to submit for other people's projects. But the ridiculous part is that I have agents that represent me as an actress who don't know I produce those projects because they think it's more desirable when I just mention the casting director who cast Ovum. Which is the wonderful Kim Graham who casts Homeland.
Yeah.
And yet they would rather me distance myself and act like I was just a cork in the machine than actually take accountability and be like, yeah, I wrote my dream role and I made it, and it's really good.
It's bizarre.
It's so weird.
But do it anyway.
Do it. Make those roles.
Do it anyway, particularly women and people of color. Like, the roles are just not there.
They're not
there. And don't let anybody talk about it.
Right. No. No one will ever be able to convince me not to star in my own projects if I feel there's a role for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. This has run long, but thank you so much for letting me spring this interview on you in our meeting. Okay, watch Ovum. It's great, and it's coming. When does it come out?
April 11th on VOD. Yes.
Watch it there. Pay your
$3.
Oh, I'm so excited that we're doing interviews now. Okay, so that's this week's episode. But before I leave you, here is my favorite thing from this week. Through the magic of the internet, I had a Skype this week with this man, Luke Walton, who is an Englishman, I think from Bristol, and he runs this pretty extraordinary short film competition called The Pitch, and their website is enterthepitch.com. I'll put it in the episode description, but it's enterthepitch.com, and what it is you can enter from anywhere in the world. They are based in the UK, but you can submit a 2-minute pitch video for this competition, and there's a audience voting element and then a jury element, but the winning pitch gets £30,000 to make their movie, and then when they've made their movie, Luke takes them to LA for a week for industry meetings, and there's production support. It sounds like a dream. I think the only restriction on the film is that it has to be inspired in some way by a Bible story. So don't run away. So I interrogated him about what that means, and he made it clear that it is a very loose idea. It certainly doesn't have to be moralistic. It doesn't even have to be from the Christian perspective. But it has to be in some way inspired by a story in the Bible. And the reason is that this whole operation is created and paid for by the Bible Society, which is apparently the society that's whole purpose is to get more people to read the Bible just as a text, not necessarily as a moral document. And so his mission within that is to get more artists to read the Bible. So your short story has to in some way be inspired by a Bible story, but that's it. You should definitely apply for this. Luke seems totally lovely, and this seems like an amazing opportunity. So I don't think their submissions for 2017 are open yet, but they are opening in the spring, so keep an eye on his site, enterthepitch.com, and I think you can follow them on Twitter also, at enterthepitch, and then I'm sure you'll be notified when submissions open. So apply. This is amazing. You can apply from anywhere in the world, even though they are based in England. Okay. Also, as always, the work of this podcast is for me to help you and myself crack the nut of how to have a life as an artist and entrepreneur. So if you have ideas or stories to share from your own life, successes, failures, times you learned something, or if you have questions that you would like me to answer or find answers to, people you want me to interview, you can email them or send a voice memo to fearfulless@gmail.com. That's fearfulless@gmail.com. I'll talk to you next week.